Happy to have here tonight Gary Gay and John Thompson. They are poets. Both of them are involved in the Northern California.
Haiku poets of Northern California.
Haiku poets of Northern California for many years. They've both been published in numerous magazines. And Gary is the creator of a form of poetry, a linked form of poetry called Renge. And they have published a book of some of their efforts. It's a beautiful book. I highly recommend it, called The Unlocked Gate. And tonight we'll be hearing more about how to unlock the gate of Renge poetry. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, so this is the book that John Thompson and I created. We probably been writing haiku for about 16 years. I created the form in the summer of 1992, and I'm going to just give you a little history about that so you can kind of see how we got to this point. But the book came about from our years of writing together, and then this is a selection of 25 poems out of that those 16 years of writing together. So going back in time, to 1992, there were some Japanese masters that came from Japan. They were coming on a U.S. tour to teach haiku writers how to write linking form, which is renku. Just so you know, that renku is the more modern name for renga, which is the court form of Japanese link poetry. And haiku actually comes from renga or renku as the starting verse for renku, which in the old days it was called hoku. And so Japanese masters would meet at the court, or they would go around to different villages, and they would hold a renku writing session. And the way those worked basically was just that, let's say there was eight poets, they would be presenting their verse to the master, and he would be finally accepting one, and then they would move on to the next poet. It's a very interesting form. It's challenging to write, but I found it frustrating personally. So the first day of the conference, I listened to all the things they had to say about it. I'd been writing some myself. But in the early days, I wrote one with John Thompson when he lived over in Alameda. He invited about five or six of us over there, and we spent all day writing one, and we never got farther than the 18th verse. And generally, it's about a 36th verse. So they take a long time to write, and there's a lot of effort. Also, when your verse gets accepted, you're sort of out for a while because you can't follow yourself, and you probably can't follow for four or five verses later, depending on how many are in the group. It's complicated. So I sit down and I thought, well, what is it that doesn't work for me about this form? Why don't I like this form? Why is this form not working for me? I've never had one published I've been in, and all the ones that I'd also been in, they all, many times never got finished. And, in, of course, pre-computer days, I'm dating myself, but it used to be you sent them by mail, so it would take a year to write one. It was a long process. So I finally sat down and I realized, you know, there's got to be a better way, or there's got to be a better form. And so I made a list of all the things that didn't work, and then I made a list of all the things I'd like to see happen in it. And then I tried to put together how many verses should it be, and as I experimented, I kind of came down which is the following, which is the sixth verse renge. It can be written by two or three people. And as you see, these are both two persons because it's just John and I writing together. And part of the trick to writing these is there's kind of a change up in the middle. It goes 3-2-3, and then we reverse 3-2-3. So in a way, each poet sort of has a strong part to it, either the beginning or the end. And the other poet only has a two-liner in the middle of the other guy's kind of area, you could say. So it can be playful. There's a lot of chances to change the poem as you're writing them. So once I came up with the form, I presented the next day at this conference, and the master there, whose name was Tadashi Kondo, he didn't get what I was doing. He misunderstood and thought I was offering him a shortened kind of a renku, and he took a red pen and he just sort of made all these markings like he was grading it, you know, circling this, that can't link back to that, and so on. It was kind of amusing, actually. And I kind of let go of it. I just sort of thought, well, you know, I guess it was a foolish idea. And then I missed the next meeting of the Haiku Poets of Northern California, and John and Michael were there, and I guess they were talking about how the renku sessions had gone, and people were, as I understood it, were complaining that all the problems they had with it. And then I guess Michael presented the fact that, I guess it was Michael, that said, well, Gary came up with this form, and why don't we try that? And after the meeting, a number of people got together and started working with it. And then Michael wrote an article for Frog Pond, which is the Haiku Society of America's journal. It got published in there. And then after that, I kind of let go of it. I mean, I kind of forgot about it in a way. And then all of a sudden, I started getting emails from people, even in other countries, saying, well, can you tell me if this is a good Renge or not? And I sort of felt like, well, you know, I created the form, but I'm not really the judge of it. You know, you have to kind of, if you can write haiku, you can write Renge. Because really, a Renge, each one is a separate, standalone verse of haiku. So here's the thing about Renge. It is unlike Renga. Renga is really, it goes through four seasons. There's no focus. There's no stopping point. It has devices. You have to have a moon at a certain point. You have to have a flower at a certain point. There's a love thing that happens about the 7th, 8th verse. 17th verse, I think there's a flower. So this is all sort of the opposite of everything that Renga is. It's shorter. As you can see, it's easily to be published. It can be one page. Most journals have a hard time publishing a Renku because it takes at least four pages to publish it. And a lot of poetry journals aren't going to give up that many pages to it. So one of the things that I came up with the form is I wanted it to fit on one page. And I really wanted it to be intimate between just two poets. So you get the feeling, you get to explore with another person instead of writing in isolation, yet you don't have to also wait a year for five other people to keep responding to you. So that's really how the whole poem came about, and that's sort of how the thing works. The trick is it's a thematic poem. So unlike the other Renku, you stay in one place at one time, very much like haiku is. You're in the moment. You're writing about a theme sort of within a moment. You seldom will a Renge go into a couple more days. It's really, you're at the ballpark, you're writing, by the seventh inning, you've written all you're going to write maybe about the baseball game. So they're really simple to write. They're a lot of fun. As you start collaborating with someone, you really get to know your writing partner very well. And you get a chance to, you both get to play master because you can critique each other. Why is this poem not working? Why are these verses not working? Why? Well, you used that word before. We don't want to use it again. There aren't really very many rules to it. If you stay within form and if you stay on topic and the verses are, they're sort of standalone, but they are working for the total poem. So whatever the poem is about, the verses have got to either link to the subject, or they have to link back. So we call it linking and shifting, although in a Renge, the shifting is very subtle. It's not like Renku, where you have dramatic shifts, and you're expected to actually have dramatic shifts away. I think that pretty much covers the topic, then.
That's good.
Yeah.
So they say don't judge a book by its cover, but as the author of this book, I say please do. These photographs are by Gary. And let's start with the back. This is kind of what I want poems to do, set off fireworks in your brain. And Emmeline Dickinson said, I know a poem is good when it makes my head explode. So Emily and I are both speaking metaphorically, of course. Otherwise, poetry would be even more of a messy business than it is. But what we desire is that special celebration of sight and sound within our minds. Okay, let's look at the front cover. Another beautiful picture by Gary. But a very different mood. Is it dawn or is it dusk? There's a melancholy or a sadness here, a recognition of the transitoriness of the world we live in, but at the same time a recognition of its beauty. We haiku poets call this dual awareness sabi. Now, sabi is sometimes defined as profound loneliness, but I prefer to call it life without the companionship of illusion. So here's our cover, fireworks and the all-leveling tides of time. Let's slip inside the unlocked gate, shall we? Gary, let's go to the title poem. The first two poems we'll read tonight are poems, and we'll talk about them a little bit, are the poems that are on your bookmarks too. So Gary and I will read the poems that we wrote, the verses that we wrote. The Unlocked Gate. Under the taut skin of a borrowed umbrella, first kiss.
Matchbook phone number smudged by a raindrop.
Scattered bird songs, skimming over the water, cattail fluff.
a broken web. Heavy with dew, the path grown over.
Slivers of moonlight pass through the unlocked gate.
Dented mailbox, the perfumed letter at the wrong address.
Okay, now we'll comment a little bit on these individual verses. My comment on the first verse is, isn't an umbrella all skin and spokes instead of bones, but skin without a body of its own? The bodies under this umbrella are close and growing closer. And it's a borrowed umbrella, too. How like young lovers not to bring their own umbrellas? They are not concerned with practicalities, but with following their passions. First kiss, was I talking about fireworks inside before? Successful haiku and renge present images that allow you to access the depths that resonate within you. Gary, you can do the second verse.
You want to comment each verse?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Well, of course, I'm linking back to John. I'm trying to respond to what the romance he started in his first verse. But I also want to be subtle. I want to suggest the frustration of a relationship and the fact that, you know, you've gotten this phone number from someone you're really interested in, and, you know, darn, it got smudged, and you've kind of lost the number, and now you've lost the connection.
And then I responded to Gary, said, with this poem, scattered birdsong skimming over the water, cattail fluff. So we've moved now. This is a poem of disbursement, both songs and seeds floating over the water. The songs could be mating calls. The seeds could be seen as regenerative. Yet the tone of the poem is of dissipation. The songs are not in harmony, but scattered. The cattails are breaking apart, and all that's remaining is fluff. We are out of the urban scene and placed squarely in nature. Notice how the renge, in renge, the adjacent verses can form little narratives. We connect to each other, but usually the storyline changes. So verses only directly relate to verses that are right next to each of them. So instead of a linear progression, there's a cyclical contemplation. The poet is not asking you to follow some cause and effect chain of events, but rather inviting you to let the images resonate within you. Gary, go ahead and do.
So again, John has shifted away, and it's a fairly good size shift away, because he's really very subtly alluding to any kind of relationship anymore, and so I'm sort of following his lead now, and I'm kind of going back in the nature as well, but I'm still commenting in a way on the broken relationship, because you've got this broken web, and, you know, dew is sort of a standard sign for sadness, or how brief a love relationship can be, and the path going over means it may be a path you may not go down again. But of course, I don't want to give you all that. You have to kind of read that in there and discover that on your own. But the point is, you're seeing us. I'm still linking back. He's still shifted away. I've shifted with him, and yet we're still trying to stay within the essence of the magic of the little affair or moment when two people thought they were in love, maybe. So.
And then I go to slivers of moonlight pass through the unlocked gate. Now, moonlight is a very difficult thing to fetter. It is a free spirit, able to penetrate anywhere. Still, only a little bit, slivers of moonlight pass through. The gate is unlocked, but it is a gate, something that restricts entry. Unlocked implies sometimes locked. Notice how the lightness and freedom first implied in the poem has called up its opposites. We are also now returning from the natural world back to the constructed world. Once again, I ask you, not what's happening in the poem, but what poem is happening in you through these poems?
And actually, this is a really fine two-line verse by John, because one thing, most people won't write two-line haiku, and so it's it's very difficult to write a good two-line haiku. That's a challenge in almost any renge you write, is getting those two lines. But clearly it can be done, because John's done a good job of it here. Well, one thing I'd like to point out is he has some nice contrast in here also. Slivers of moonlight, well, we know moon is white, and the light's probably white. And yet, I don't know, somehow every time I look at this gate, I can't help but imagine a black iron gate of some sort. It may not be, but that's what I bring to the poem, just trying to guess where he's going, what he's thinking. And I like this verse, too, because, as John said, I mean, you know, it's another barrier to this little relationship that was starting to happen. And like any relationship, the door can be open or the door can be closed. In this case, there's a gate and it's unlocked, so you still think you have this opportunity to have the little bit of romance that you started out in the first link, because the gate's unlocked. The door could be open. You can pass through this way. The moonlight did. So then I come up with the ending verse, and I'm shifting, but I'm also linking back to the theme, and I'm kind of linking back to the beginning and the fact that my verse is dented mailbox, the perfumed letter at the wrong address. So again, there was an attempt at the connection that was lost. Somehow they got the address wrong, or the zip code wrong, or the city wrong, or who knows what happens to letters. They end up in the funniest places. They just get delivered wrong, maybe, even with a correct address. So it ends up being a sad case for these two people, because it seems like they can't quite make this connection. But the renge is very successful in the fact that it tells you the story and yet lets you bring your own experiences to it. We don't want to tell you everything, as good haiku should. We're only suggesting implying things, and you have to bring your life experiences to it.
Yeah, well, what I really like, one of the things I really like about renge is this poetic dialogue that I just don't get anywhere, or I rarely get in my life otherwise. And a lot of poetry, is especially modern poetry, I think, is very isolated, and people think, you know, you have to write it in your room, away from everyone, and that. And this is a social poem. I mean, it's social by nature, and so I really like that aspect of linked verse. And there's one haiku I wanted to read you too, by Tsuji Momoko. The butterfly, its face is the same as the caterpillar's. I'll read it one more time. The butterfly, its face is the same as the caterpillar's. I really love this poem, and it's not because it has really anything to do with butterflies or caterpillars, but to me it's people. That people are the same no matter what dress they have on, what circumstance, if they're succeeding or failing in different aspects of their lives. And I guess what it does for me is I'm telling you a couple times today, let the poem resonate inside you. For me, there's some music inside me that I in this poem that I recognize, but the poem almost puts some lyrics, some words to the music, and I understand it a lot. I understand this feeling I couldn't quite articulate without this poem. So I'd say the poem is the match, but it's your reactions are the fireworks, to go back to my my things before.
The poem also seems to be a rather clever play on the cone of what is your original face.
Oh, yeah.
And also the face of the dragonfly is nothing but eyes. That one.
Butterfly. Yeah. And I'm sure it's connected, and it brings up other poems too, or other traditions. So Gary, why don't we read? We're going to read the poem on the other side of your bookmark here, the interlude poem, and we won't comment on every verse. We'll just make a little bit of a comment at the end of the poem here. Interlude. Before the symphony, the blare of horns in the parking lot.
During the interlude, the soft sound of rain.
With a whoosh, of the conductor's baton, the winds begin to stir.
Slow movement, and then the thunder of drums.
From peak to peak, the solo violinist.
The flutes fluttering softly into silence.
One of the things I like about this poem a lot is that Gary and I went to a symphony and wrote this poem there, or partially there, and for me now, it works really as a nice remembrance of that concert. In fact, I remember the poem now much better than I remember the actual music. But it deepens my appreciation of the concert and its context. You might see it starts with a lot of wordplay, but eventually that gets lost in just this overwhelming power of the music. So writing this Renge with Gary, it's broadened and enhanced my experience of the concert. And his perspectives gave me greater access to new perspectives within myself. That is, I would not have written From Peak to Peak, the solo violinist, if Gary had not put me in a certain space with his poem before there, the slow movement and then the thunder of drums. So he kind of gave me a new place to write from. That's another thing I really appreciate about this verse.
So John, did you write 2 and 5?
Right. So in the we alternate verses. So I wrote 1, 3, and 5. Yeah.
Well, you can.
Oh, you didn't do the 3, 2. Three.
You can actually tell the order by the placement.
Three lines.
Whoever's names on top starts it, and whoever's names on the bottom ends it.
So you just alternate all the
time.
You are alternating. Mm-hmm. What's changing is the size of the verse.
Yeah, where the
line. You're not changing the place where you are. You're just simply getting either three verses and then two verses and three verses.
Three lines,
but the
mean,
person
Gary.
Doesn't change place.
Oh, I got the impression that the book always wrote the three lines.
In the book, we did a clever little thing. At the bottom, you'll see there's a little T and G. Yeah. That tells you the order of the verses without having to go out and look it up someplace. It's this little thing we came up with. So, commenting on what John had said here, this Renge, unlike the earlier one we read, isn't so much dependent on, although John commented on linking back, it isn't linking back so much as it is linking to the topic, which is the music and the symphony. So, we weren't trying as hard to link back as much as we were trying to link to the form itself or to the theme itself, and that's really probably the major thing. This is a slight difference than the other one.
Now we'd like to take questions on Renge, if anyone has any. Yes?
I have a question, comment. I really like the titles of both of these. I think they're brilliant titles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to know how you came upon them. I know the Unlocked Gate is actually within the poem, but I just think they speak to the experience of Renge.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned it, because as a haiku writer, we can't title haiku, so it's nice that we can title these Renge. And after we finish the Renge, generally we don't know the title till we finish, and that's the last thing we do. And sometimes there'll be weeks before we get a good title, but so I can't remember exactly how we decided on these, but we'll go back and forth and. That's another thing, though. It's a cooperative thing. We need to agree on it. And
title, that's a good question, because people ask me that all the time, is how do you arrive at a title? So the way you arrive at a title is in the Unlocked Gate, we took it from a line in the poem. It was just seemed obvious to us. But it does now. At the time, I'm sure we were struggling going, what should we call this? And then in the interlude, of course, we just simply took a word from music, specifically the symphony. So usually the way a title comes, it either comes from a line in the verse, it comes from what the subject matter is, or sometimes what you don't want to do, let's say you're writing a Renge and the subject red. Well, you don't really want to say red in your title, because the minute you do that, you kind of gave away the secret of the poem. You want people to sort of, because by reading interlude, you didn't write at first know what the poem was. Maybe you knew it was about music, but you probably didn't really know for sure until you started getting into it. And then Lock Gate, of course, you know, you don't get that verse till where are you down that verse? I forget. It's the
almost the fifth.
Fifth verse. So by that time, you're way into the poem and probably already have a feeling what the poem's about. And it could have been any title, I suppose, but although that works really well there. So titles usually don't start out in the beginning. Titles usually come later. And we sometimes we'll just get it. Sometimes we really struggle. And a lot of times we'll have a working title. We manage to write a lot. And so sometimes we can write a poem within a couple of hours. It doesn't, you know, we have written poems within an hour. Most of the time we go hiking or something and it takes us, well, 2 or 3 hours to really kind of complete one. And once in a while it'd be something where there's one last verse from one of us and we're just kind of burned out. We've written 5 verses. We've talked about it a lot. We just can't quite get that last verse. And we'll just go home and we'll say, I'll email you the last verse or a couple suggestions. One of the methods for writing we have is that when we start writing a renge is... there's really two major ways to start one. Is you either agree on a topic, we're going to write about eggs or chickens or something, or you, in our case, we like to actually get out in nature, so we'll go out, hike out to a waterfall, or, you know, John knows a lot of hiking trails, we'll go someplace different, and then we'll just ride along the way for about a half an hour, and then we'll find some rock to sit on, and we'll say, okay, well, read me what you got, and we'll each have 2 or 3 poems, and we'll read them back and forth, and we'll be inspired by one. We'll simply go, oh, that's a good starter. We'll abandon the rest of the poems, and then we'll, at that point, we know what our topic is. We both agree that sometimes when you write in that style, you still might not actually know the topic of what you're writing about, because you've got this first verse on, an umbrella with taut skin. I have no idea where I'm going to go. Is it a love poem, or is it about weather? I mean, I could go a lot of directions, so then that's where my creativity comes in. And then by the second verse, we're discussing it. It's a collaboration. Well, is this a love verse, John? Are we talking about love, or is this a weather verse? And, you know, and then we'll settle on where we think it's going. And there are times we'll get to the third verse, and we'll say, well, all 3 verses have birds in them, and all 3 verses have got some kind of flower in them. Is it about flowers, or is it about birds? Mm-hmm. In that case, we actually might be writing a 2-subject renge. There can be 2 levels. You can be writing about birds as your major topic, and suddenly there might be a flower name in every verse. Although flower wasn't your main theme, it was your sub-theme. So
in the interlude one, I get a sense that there's weather going on. Mm-hmm.
It was a storm
in the mountains.
Yeah, it was a stormy, rainy day when we went to the symphony, actually. And so we were kind of affected by it just going in, you know. So, yeah. What else?
Shall we read
sure.
a few more?
Yeah.
So let's go to Serenade, first of all.
Where is it?
Well, we'll have to go to Table of Contents, and it's
that'd be too easy.
16. Okay. Serenade. Harvesting pears from my backyard, I feel wealthy.
Glowing gold, the sun hangs in the branches.
Turning from its ball, the cat licks its paws and yawns. Cool evening breeze.
The potter's wheel turns slowly under old leaves. Shadows changing shapes.
A game of catch extends into moonlight.
Back and forth, a slow exchange between crickets.
And then the next page, very still.
Still life. An Amish quilt draped over a low branch, dappled in sunlight.
On the faded checkerboard, red waits to be kinged.
Worn wooden bowl, a few green apples from the garden.
Soda bottle vase, a single stem bouquet of Queen Anne's lace.
Lost orchard ladder, climbed by morning glories.
Rusty horseshoe hung high in the walnut tree, wind-borne laughter.
Still life.
Father's Day is next, Gary. That's on, I'll find it here. 24. Father's Day, frosty morning, it takes both of us to move Dad's easy chair.
Cleaning out his office desk, Mom's grade school picture.
War medals, he never showed me, but gave to my son.
His pocket knife in the bottom of my blue jeans.
His screen name on my buddy list.
Catching in my reflection a glimpse of him.
And now, seasonal one, Boo, Gary, from page 36 here. This is a great picture by Gary, too, I think. I don't know if everyone can see it, but it's... Boo, trick-or-treaters. The old witch refuses to answer her door.
Skeleton in the closet hands me a jacket.
13 pumpkins line my neighbor's stairway. Our annual hello.
The new scarecrow. So that's where my favorite shirt went.
Halloween wind. A ghoul chases its face.
Apparition. Moonlight crosses the bedroom into the mirror.
As Gary says, a lot of these poems are written on hikes around here, and we'll end our reading tonight with Shell Beach. Page 48, Gary.
Shell Beach. Evening mist, a blanket of waves, retakes the tide pool.
Shadowless still, a washed up jellyfish.
Seagull bones, a feather lifts and falls, funeral procession.
Dressed all in black, she tosses a yellow rose to the surf below.
So many footprints taken back by the sea.
In the ocean's roll, the tumbled memories of a thousand dreams. Thanks a lot for coming up.
You guys have such great imagery.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm a photographer, so I should spring from that a little bit.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Will you hang out for a while?
Sure.
If people have
more
questions,
yeah.
You know, like,
oh, sure.
Their book is right over here. You know, like, so
happens to be for sale.
It's for sale. It's really beautifully done. I have to say, you guys have just done a tremendous job. And many rivers, books, and tea has adopted the Buddhist custom of dana, or generosity. So there is a donation bowl on the counter. Any amount that you can contribute will be gratefully received. A portion of the donation goes to our speakers so that they can publish another volume. A portion of the donation goes to the store so that we can continue to hold events here. And I thank you all for coming. Oh, one last announcement. There is a tea tasting on Saturday. This coming Saturday, the 25th, at 3 p.m., the tea tasting is over here, and it's a wonderful way to sample five or six of the teas that we have. And this Saturday's tea tasting will be on oolongs, Chinese oolongs. So oolongs are wonderful teas, and it's a lot of fun, and I invite you all to attend. Thank you very much for coming tonight. Thank you very much for spending
the
time.
Thank you.
Should
we turn this off, or did you...
Fortunately,
you need to learn this, Jim.
I should.
I'm not going to be here the next 2 weeks.